everybody, and welcome to episode 20 of season 9 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the Die Hard duo, Die Hard 4 and 5, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and join me once again on this beautiful Independence Day is Alan Sanders of The Alan Sanders Show.
Hey, happy 249th birthday to the good old U.S. of A. Thanks for having me back.
See, it's amazing that this episode actually, you know, just fell out within yours. You know, it wasn't even planned that way. And, you know, what better person to have on than you for July 4th, where you can talk about America's independence for 249 years.
It's pretty big. We're getting close to the real big one, another milestone. I mean, I know a lot of us are already talking about what's going to happen in the nation a year from now for the 250th anniversary. So I always look forward to the fireworks. I always look forward, the station where I work, we do a morning parade. So that's already done and in the books. Just a lot of fun.
Very cool. All right. So episode 20 begins with Trey informing Gabriel of a problem and ends with Farrell trying to hide from Emerson. So we're continuing with yesterday's stuff that happened, the stuff that happened in yesterday's episode where they realized that somebody is lurking around Woodlawn. You know, I wonder if Gabriel assumes that it's McLean, or he's just not sure yet at this point. What do you think? Mm-hmm.
I don't think he knows. He's not telegraphing that he thinks it's McLean. Do you ever get the sense that some of his facial expressions really similar to like Billy Bob Thornton?
That's really funny that you mentioned that, because I never would have made that connection, but that when you say it, it now makes a lot of sense. So yes. Wow.
I mean, the way he kind of articulates his mouth and some of the gestures, you could, in this movie, there's a lot of places I see where he could have been like a younger brother to him.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. Makes sense.
Sorry, I meant to bring that up in yesterday's episode, but then when he does that turn away from the monitor and he does that kind of like that delivery, I'm like, oh my God, that's Billy Bob Thornton.
That's right. Wow. So Trey at this point says, you know, we just had yesterday that Farrell turned off one of the turbine fans, you know, in the cooling section in the basement. And at this point, Trey goes, someone set off the alarms. And then we hear like alarms in the background, and you know, Gabriel's response is great. He goes, yes, thank you, detective. I can hear that. Find a way to turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it goes back to his clever quips, you know, to his henchmen, more or less. You know, this guy is definitely not stable. You can tell that very easily. And then we get an outside shot of some sort of federal building, and then we get another gratuitous shot of the two the federal goons, you know, in this movie. One of them is Russ from Star Trek, and the other one is we talked about him earlier. Also, these guys have absolutely nothing to do in this movie. They're just there, just as a cog in the system. That's all they're there for.
Yeah, that's so funny. I was going to refer to him as our Black Vulcan shows up early.
Yeah, more or less.
Although he does add a little more emotion to his voice than he had when he was with was it Voyager?
Yes, he was on Voyager.
Yeah.
Right. And he goes, "What do you got?" And he goes, "We got a problem. The alarms went off at Woodlawn. It's got to be him." And then Bowman overhears this and goes, "What's Woodlawn?" It's NSA, a secure facility outside of Baltimore. It's a failsafe we built after 9/11 to back up all financial information. The moment the networks were hit, all the financial data automatically began downloading to those servers. Banks, Wall Street, corporate records, government funds, all of it. Basically a backup for the accumulated wealth of America. All in one location? What could Gabriel do with it? Well, if he can get in, He might try to transfer the data to a portable hard drive. Then he could have access to those accounts from anywhere. Siphon off billions for himself. We'd have no way to trace it. Or knowing him, he could erase it all and send us all back to the Stone Age. Why the hell wasn't I told about this? Frankly, it's above your pay grade. My pay grade? How the hell did Gabriel find out about this? When even I didn't know about it. Well, he designed it. It was his program. He knew that hacking your system last night would trigger that download. That's brilliant. You two geniuses, stay out of my way. So, again, they give us this minute within the movie to quickly explain to us, once again, how stupid the system is of the way that they built it. You know, they decided that what they're going to do here is just, explain to us the whole plan. You know, it goes back to what you were talking about yesterday, how in the original Die Hards, you know, there are surprises along the way that change everything. Now, we already know that Gabriel is downloading all financial information. We don't know that the one bit of information that we don't know here is that he's the one who designed the system. That's it. Other than that, it's information that we as the viewer are already aware of at this point.
Right.
So they're not really giving us much information except for the fact that Bowman isn't privy to this information. That's it. So again, it's also a little too much. It's too much here. Yeah.
The whole explanation, they're copying all of the financial data. He can take it and put it on a hard drive, and he could then access that data from anywhere in the world. Well, no, it doesn't work that way. He's not going to put – you know how much data – first of all, if you thought you were copying all of the financial data of all the transactions of everything around the world, great. You're not fitting it on a drive, certainly not at that time. Second, what does that matter in terms of being able to access accounts? What does that matter to do with the actual money? You lock down anything digital. You don't have any – no banks would send anything back and forth if they thought there was anything compromised. This is actually – when I got to this part, script writing, I was like, this is so dumb. This is written for people who still think that we use typewriters.
That's right. But again,
it makes no sense at all.
But in 2007, it makes a little more sense for them to believe that the viewers are not going to understand it.
I had a hard time when it came out, let alone doing it now.
Okay, but again, we've already talked about the fact that you were working at IBM at the time. So it's your knowledge of this type of stuff was on a higher level than most people. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the fact that, again, I'm not justifying this at all. I think it is. I agree with you. It's completely stupid. The explanation and the fact that this is what they're doing is stupid. No question about that. But from a script writing perspective, when they wrote this, they thought, hey, this is a great idea because nobody knows enough about computers that they're going to be able to figure this out, and nobody ever will,
It doesn't even pass a common sense test. You're like, okay, so you're copying the data. That doesn't mean that you're removing it from somewhere else. Doesn't mean that it's giving authorization to these systems. You're just copying numbers. It strains the belief system so much that for me, you're right. I did have a little bit more knowledge, but it just pulls me completely out of the movie.
Right. Okay. Again, I completely understand that. That'll completely pull you out of the movie because, again, it's especially when watching it now and you have a better understanding of what's going on. Okay. This just doesn't make any sense. Also, to say to put it on a hard drive, how many gigabytes were hard drives back then as opposed to what we have now?
Well, just imagine every financial system in the world. People are running mainframes in every financial institution, even at this point, with massive storage. And then you're going to condense it on one hard drive? I'm sure people at that time would have loved to say, hey, we've solved our cloud storage solution. We can put it all on this drive. This guy's a genius. He's figured out how to take the volume of every transaction of every financial institution in the States and condense it to one drive. It's so dumb.
He's got a super drive.
It doesn't make any sense. And I keep going back. I know even if you don't, the idea of you're saying he's going to be able to capture that data of every, he's copying all of this and he's going to be able to look at it wherever he wants around the world. Well, okay. It's like, I got a copy of Rob's spreadsheet. Well, that doesn't mean I have access to his bank.
Exactly. Well, apparently in this universe they do.
Yeah, in this fantasy. We're suddenly in a world where there's magic going on because that's the only way this works.
Okay, maybe it is a fantasy world. There you go.
It's a modern fantasy. All right, I'll let you go. I'm sorry.
A modern John McClane fantasy.
This is fanfic. This is what this is. This is somebody who wanted to do a Die Hard movie and didn't know how to do one.
I would sort of agree with that statement. That actually makes a little bit of sense. And then we're back at Woodlawn, and we see that the alarms are blaring all over the place. And we get a shot of Emerson trying to figure out what's going on. He looks around, and then the shot changes, and we're back on Farrell's screen, where he's just got all this hacking stuff on his screen trying to figure out, and he goes, "Let me see if I can get a floor plan of this place." And then Russo shows up behind him and John and goes, "Okay, don't move. You get away from the bag now." Okay. He goes, "We've been waiting for you." Again, this is just, I don't know, something's very strange here with the way that this whole conversation goes with all of it.
Now, can I ask you something that bothered the absolute dog squeeze out of me the first time I went through this and kind of rewatched the minutes? Yesterday, as they're walking through this scene, and we even commented, John McClane picks up one of the biggest adjustable, monkey wrenches you could find. Just
That's
picks
right.
up this big giant. I was assuming when he was like hoping the guy was getting closer that he was going to have it in his hand and swing around and club the guy. Where did it go? He had it in his hand. I never saw him put it down in the last minute. And I'm watching this guy inch up and I'm thinking, oh, he's just wanting to get within range. He's going to swing around and just knock this guy's block off with this, which would probably kill him. And all of a sudden, there's no hammer or there's no wrench. It just bugged me.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. That it they had the setup and they just didn't follow through with it, with the way they did it.
Which now I have to wonder, why the heck did you show me a shot of him picking up the wrench to begin with? It foreshadowed nothing because it's gone now. It's completely out of the scene.
Correct. It's a Chekhov's unused wrench. Then Russo starts to move closer to John and goes, "I've been waiting for you too." And then the two of them, as he gets close enough, John grabs him and makes him shoot his gun, which I always find funny when they do that in movies, that they make you pull the trigger on something, and instead of trying to take the gun out of your hand. And then Farrell seeks cover as the two of them continue their fight between around it, and Farrell tries to get away and ends up falling down. Off of the ledge as John is fighting, and he not just falls out of the ledge, then he falls into like a I don't even know what you would call it, like a pit.
I was it's like a trap door for a stage. Like,
Yeah.
why would you have a door, a
Oh,
trap
it's a vent.
door
I believe
above,
it's a vent. It looks like it's a vent.
but it's on a hinge. It's on
Because
a hinge. It's
maybe you go
rocking because
down there, maybe you go down there to fix something. I don't know.
then where's the ladder? The architecture makes no sense. It's a trap door above pipes with no scaffolding, no ladder, no reason that you would use that to access anything.
It's a way just to bang up Farrell.
That's about it. And the dude, I mean, okay, I know you said, and that drives me nuts too when a person that's holding a gun, maybe he fires off a shot, but then his hand is being wrestled with. Why would he be trying to squeeze off shots? Unless you're trying to get the idea. Maybe he was trying to shoot the other guy, but even then he wasn't aiming for the other guy. He was aiming at the board.
Right.
None of that action sequence made it wasn't motivated by anything that made sense.
Nope,
We
not at
didn't
all.
have the wrench. They're wrestling. He's just firing off every shot he can into what? The thin air. The kid just goes rolling underneath. I get it, the shots in his general direction, but then why the trap door? None of this. It's there for the script. The script writer was like, "Ooh, this will make a good action sequence." He rolls down, and as he rolls, he hits an opening. The panel falls apart. He falls down, hits a the crossbeam. Then he hits a pipe, and then he rolls down, and he ends up. Fine, that's
And
action, but it's not.
he just groans a little bit.
I mean, and again, you can write an action sequence that's that's supported by reality. There is nothing about this that makes any sense.
Nope.
If there had been a ladder there and he had fallen through an unsecured trapdoor, where's his way up? And why have a trapdoor there if there's no reason to access? Like, there's nothing to access there.
Right.
It's just there for the script.
Yep. And like, then this fight continues, and John somehow gets Russo onto a chair that, you know, with wheels, and wheels him, you know, pushes him, and he ends up flying down a flight of stairs, mm-hmm. you know, while on the chair. Now, again, another callback to the original Die Hard with, you know, the fight with Tony as, you know, he falls down the stairs, you know, this way. Again, no, it's just too busy. There's nothing really going on, though.
Now, I got to tell you, I don't know if this was a practical stuntman or if they had one of the best looking dummies. I've been dogging this movie hard for the last day and a half. This was the most like, holy crap stunts that this looked really good. I mean, it was very real looking, and this is where it made sense. He's trying to get this guy out. He pushes him and sees the stairwell, and this dude goes flying, and you see him hit the bottom, and then it cuts to the angle where he's rolling. But I'm like, dang, I don't know how somebody didn't get killed on that stunt.
That's right.
I mean, that's a difference of that was motivated versus what happened to the kid.
Right. Exactly. And Farrell is down on the bottom of the dungeon and just starts screaming up. He goes, McClane. Mm-hmm. Now, it's funny. How does he know that McClane is not in the middle of this fight now anymore? You know, that.
Right.
And that he's even going to be able to hear him.
Mm hmm. And again, yeah. You see the trap door swinging on its hinge.
That's right.
All right. I mean, again, I was just giving a compliment on the stunt. I'll leave it at that.
That's right. And then John starts walking down the stairs a little bit, and he goes, "Kid, Matt, kid." At least he remembers his name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is, I think, the first time he calls him Matt, as opposed to Matthew or kid or, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's really funny because it looks like he's about to climb up a flight of stairs, Farrell, because it looks like they give us a shot from within that is like under a stairwell. And mm-hmm. then he lifts up his foot and it turns out that it's just another vent and he just breaks through the vent, which it's a nice fake out from that perspective. And then we get to see Emerson again. Very busy, you know, with a fan going over him and stuff like that. And then we hear Gabriel's voice goes, "Emerson, we seem to have a problem in one of the cooling towers." And he goes, Tower 7, I know what's going on. And he goes, "Okay." Now, it's just, again, it's very funny. He's not telling him that, you know, we think that it's, he's not giving him enough information. He's saying we have a problem. You know, what are we, do we have a technical problem?
Right.
We have a problem because someone set off an alarm. You know, he's not giving enough information to Emerson for him to know what to expect when he gets to where he needs to get to.
Right. But he does seem to know he's got to take, but he does seem to know he's got to take an automatic weapon to go fix the problem. Could be a stopped up toilet.
That's right. Isn't that how you fix a toilet?
Oh, you know, and part of this, maybe to me, this is lazy filmmaking as well. What I think you're doing is, well, the audience knows it's John McClane. So obviously the henchmen don't have to be told it's him. We as the audience are watching the movie. But in reality, if you're watching the movie actively, that's exactly what you're asking. Why wouldn't you say, hey, we may have an intruder, or we may have somebody armed, be careful. You know, just something to indicate that the bad guy is intelligent enough to let the henchmen know what he's going up against.
That's right. Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. And again, they do a typical movie mistake here. I know that you, like I, have shot weapons before. You don't pick up a machine gun and then cock the gun at this point. There's no mm-hmm. purpose for it. Either he already has a bullet in the chamber. Again, if he's going to stop a toilet, then he doesn't need a bullet in the chamber. I wonder if later when we see him, you know, if he's going to cock his gun again, you know, because they do that a lot in these movies also.
they love, and I don't know if it's an actor thing who's like, oh, this is something busy I can do. I can cock the gun. But yeah, you're right. You either have it loaded and racked ready to fire if you're in a situation like this, or, I mean, I guess maybe that's his habit. It's not ready to fire now, but he's gonna, now that he has to go into harm's way. But yeah, let's watch and see if he does it again, because you don't have to do it twice.
Exactly. Very strange. But okay. Again, it's for people who don't know anything about guns. They want to make it seem as if they're doing something. Okay, I'm ready. I'm gonna cock the gun. That's what it is.
Yep.
Then we get a shot of Bowman getting ready to go. And the first thing that I notice here is we actually can see Bowman's badge. Do you see that he has his badge hooked on his belt?
Mm-hmm.
And what does that badge look like?
It looks like the picture badge.
That's right. So this sort of negates what we were talking about yesterday with the fake badge to Lucy. Well, apparently that's what the FBI uses as badges in this movie.
Not necessarily. No, I get this. Once you're in the building, if this is your access card to get through security doors, once you're in the building, but that's not when you go show a suspect or a bad guy or saying, hey, Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so, I'm with the FBI. You have normally an actual badge and an actual FBI ID, not your ID card when you're in the building.
Oh, I agree with you on that, but I'm saying here at least they show us that this is the ID badge for the building. Okay, but why does he need it then? To be able to get, you know, when he's in the armory getting ready to go out.
Yeah. The other thing that bothers the crap out of me in this scene, this guy's moving with intention. He's getting up, he's putting his body armor on. I mean, he's the boss getting body armor on. He's getting ready to go into action. He's got his weapon on. Nobody in the background has any sense of urgency. They're just sitting around, chatting, acting like it's just a normal day, nothing going on. It doesn't feel like anybody else is in on the urgency of the situation.
No, apparently not.
and that's going to continue through, except for the other principal actors, everybody that's a background extra. I mean, literally, you got one woman with her hand on her hip, just kind of chit-chatting to a guy.
They're in the newsroom. You know, they're just getting ready in the newsroom.
They're not doing anything. They're just like,
nope.
You would think they'd be focused on helping with intel, you know, getting the intel together, looking for any last minute things, coordinating other ops. I mean, they're just sitting around.
That's right.
Oh.
And then Melina comes into the room and says, sir. And he goes, get the HR team to stand by. We need to move to Woodlawn now. The roads out are completely blocked. DC's in total gridlock. Oh, get us some helicopters. Sir, they've all been pulled by the Pentagon for search and rescue. Melina, buy me some goddamn helicopters. Immediately. Look, the Pentagon has jets flying cap over DC. Have them send one to Woodland and keep an eye on things till we get there. Let's go. So it's a nice little speech, but it doesn't really tell us anything. Like, you know, why are they going to be giving priority to Melina and Bowman to get either a helicopter or a plane at this point?
Well, the idea that this guy at the FBI can tell the DOD to have one of their Air Force pilots diverted from its mission to go and circle some other place just because he said so.
That's right.
It makes no sense. Except, hey, we've got this cool digital thing we got coming up in the script that tells us we have to have an F-35 fight.
Right. I mean, the only way that would have made more sense is if they would have had the two federal goons around and then might have said, okay, well, we can pull some strings for this type of thing. But, you know, apparently it's probably above Roman's pay grade to ask for these type of things anyway.
But, okay, just – I know you said, okay, fine. I was with IBM. I might be – please, in what world – does a field office agent get to call the Department of Defense and say, I need you to scramble a jet to be on standby?
He's not a field office. No, he's not a field office agent. He's the head of the cyber division, I guess.
Well, but I mean, okay, that's an office. That's not the head of the FBI. He's not the FBI director.
No, not at all. No.
And even then, I don't think the FBI director can just call up, hey, Secretary of Defense, hey, buddy, remember when we were running on the campaign? Yeah, isn't that cool? We're both, hey, I need you to scramble a jet for me and put it on my order so I can have him, like, look for a bad guy.
That's right.
I don't think it works that way.
No, it doesn't. Doesn't at all. And what's funny is, get the HR team. You have any idea what the HR team is?
Well, last I checked, HR is human resources. So.
That's right. So the human resources are going to be on standby.
They've got everyone's phone number anyway, right? So
That's right.
I don't know if HR means something else
It's
in
the
it, but
hostage and rescue team.
is that what it's supposed to be?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which makes more sense.
It does, but do they call the hostage and rescue team the HR team?
I don't know. Apparently Bowman does. Maybe because he just deals with cyber crime, so he's not really sure of the exact terminology.
Hmm.
That would be my only guess for that. again, it's just very
okay.
funny the way this whole thing
Here's what
works.
I just looked it up very quickly. He would have called them the HRT.
I know. I knew the answer to that.
Okay.
But apparently the writer didn't know that.
Okay. Oh, that was bugging me.
It's the
so much of this movie is bugging me, and I hate it because I don't want it to be irritating.
Just wait till you're back next at the next half of the season.
Oh, it only gets worse.
It only gets worse. That's for sure.
Well, you know what? We can at least have a good time looking at it and laughing, right?
Oh, for sure. Isn't that part of the fun?
Mm-hmm.
And then we're back with John, who's walking down the stairs, and he passes the broken chair, and then we see Russo lying on the ground. He goes, "Where's my daughter?"
Mm-hmm.
And then perfect timing, his walkie-talkie beeps, and we hear Gabriel say, "Russo, check in." And he goes, John picks up the walkie-talkie and goes, "Yeah, I think Russo's on his way down to meet your girlfriend, dickhead. Hold on a minute. Looks like he's coming around."
Mm-hmm.
And then, the whole time John firstly kicks Russo to turn him over. When he's threatening him, he holds his tie. He's gonna strangle him with his tie, type of thing. But John likes being able to use walkie talkies. I mean, what's a Die Hard movie without a walkie talkie, right?
Oh, exactly.
You need one. And we get a shot of Lucy also quite happy and surprised that she hears her father's voice of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Gabriel then looks at the walkie-talkie and is, I can't say he's completely shocked that it's John, but it's still, his character overdoes it here. It's very theatrical the way that he does this here.
Well, and it doesn't help the way they chose to do the camera, because they kept the camera low to be even kind of with Lucy, and as it pulls back, because he is so close to the camera, it has to tilt so far up that it's super exaggerated.
Yeah, exactly. And then John lets Russo say something, and he goes, "It's McLean. He's on the third floor, and the kid is." And then I like the fact that they only give us the dialogue, and we don't see this happening. And
mm-hmm.
then we hear the gunshot,
mm-hmm.
and Lucy's shocked and stuff like that. And it's funny that Russo has to actually tell Gabriel that it's McLean. Like, he doesn't already know that it is. So
mm-hmm.
Why is he adding this information that it is McLean? But it I guess you could sort of say it's admirable that Russo, even at his, when he's this damaged, I guess you can say,
broken,
is still, broken, is still willing to be loyal to Gabriel at this point.
Right.
And then after John shoots, we see John saying, "Get all that. That's right. I'm on the third floor, but I'm coming to get you. Don't move now."
Now, I will tell you, there was this nice moment because it felt very cold. Like, we thought, did he just really assassinate this guy?
That's right.
But it was obviously theatrical. It was done to shock these folks on the other end, Gabriel, and, of course, his daughter flinches when she hears the gunshot. But I did like that he comes back and he realized, okay, he didn't kill the guy. He's going to tie him up. And because that's a fine line. I mean, get it. He bags a lot of bad guys, but it's because if he doesn't, they're in the middle of trying to kill him. This guy, he's not hurting anybody.
No.
So I did find, again, I'm going to find these little glimmers of these moments that are, I'm going to be praiseworthy because I haven't been very praiseworthy of the movie. I liked that moment because it fools the bad guys into thinking he had no problem shooting. Like, that's what he wants them to think, that I just assassinated your guy down on the ground.
That's right.
But he's not that kind of a person, and I like
that. He's not that ruthless. Exactly. It's great. I like the fake out. It's done well because they also they fake out the audience for about 30 seconds also.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Which works well too. Yeah. And then we see John I guess tending to Russo, and he says, "Don't move now. I'll send the doctor." Which I think that's a little too much for him to say he's going to send him a doctor, but okay.
No, you know what? It didn't, and maybe because so much else was bothering me, because I didn't think of it as a funny line. I thought of it literally in case the audience didn't get it. No, I didn't shoot this guy. I'm going to make sure he gets help.
Right.
And just like, in case. Well, I also think it's funny. Don't move. Like, this guy, based on that trajectory of going what he did down the stairs, this dude ain't walking for a while. This guy, he may have his back in like three places. I don't know if he's moving ever.
That's right. And we never find out because we never see him again.
Right.
You know, this is his last shot. They don't show us Russo anymore. And then we're back with Gabriel, and Gabriel turns to Rand, who's the guy who jumped out of the helicopter and stayed alive and got hit by John's car in the beginning and stayed alive and all that stuff. And he goes, "Kill this guy and I'll give you a Mize cut." You'd think that their cuts would have already gone up.
Yeah, already.
You know,
they got rid of the whole cyber crew already. So,
apparently their cuts weren't factored into anything at that point.
Maybe not. Or maybe the reason Gabriel's okay giving him the other guy's cut is he's already planning to take the four cyber guys' cuts anyway.
Exactly. Maybe. It could be like a Joker type of thing, you know, where the Joker, you know, from the Dark Knight, where everyone has to kill someone else in order to be able to, get a larger share for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
But I'm glad you brought that up. That's the difference, because we've seen this before. It's not the first movie, won't be the last movie where, hey, we're whittling down our guys, but that's a bigger share. The Dark Knight does it in such an intelligent and well done way because it's just much better writing. It's better storytelling, better writing, same premise, but executed better.
Yeah. But it's, we're still a year away from the Dark Knight coming out. So no one even knows about that yet.
Oh yeah. But I'm saying if we want to compare looking back as to how can you handle that?
Yeah,
Dark Knight, 100 times better storytelling.
No question about that. And then we get a shot of Emerson, looking around for Farrell and John, and then Emerson is going upstairs, and Farrell hears him and then he tries to hide behind or next to a ladder. He doesn't really conceal himself very well, but you can see his heart pounding as Emerson is on the stairs above him.
Mm-hmm.
And as he's doing that, this segment ends. So not much happens here, but we get to see that John is not as ruthless as Gabriel seems to think he might be.
Mm-hmm. And we did get I did think the highlight, the chair throwing him down the stairwell, that, because I watched it a few times to see, was that a dummy? And if it's not, that stuntman earned his pay that day, because he hits some of those steps before it goes out of frame. So even if there was padding down at the bottom to catch him that was just off frame, he still hit steps, and that had to hurt.
Yeah, well, they know what they're doing.
It's amazing. It's and you know what? Stuntmen do get hurt. People do, sometimes, especially if you're leaving it to the actor to hopefully push you hard enough to hit your mark. If you fell a little short, that dude, maybe he hit the steps, but it looked good for the shot and they used it.
Yeah.
I'm not suggesting he got hurt, but I'm always amazed when I see a practical stunt and I'm thinking, okay, was that a dummy? Just, it looked so good. Or was that a real person? And I don't think it was a dummy. I think it was a real person that got thrown backwards down that flight of steps. And that today, that's the highlight for me. I was like, holy crap, that was great.
Yeah, they do it really well. I like it. Okay. So do you have anything else you want to add about this particular segment?
No, I think we did a pretty good job covering it.
All right. Excellent. So today's segment is Franchise Fever, where my guests will give their top five movie franchises that have at least four entries in them.
Okay. I'm gonna tell you how I rank them, because it was really hard to come up with one through five. It wasn't hard coming up with five, but ranking them. I chose to rank them based on how often I go back to rewatch them.
Okay.
So it's not a statement about how good they are, but some of them I go back to a lot more than others. Okay, does that make sense?
Yeah, of course.
So for me, all of these are phenomenal franchises. Okay. And I wanted to pick one more, like as a bonus, and I might tell you at the end, but because the fourth and or fifth, I can't remember if they made a fifth, were so bad, it almost makes, like, I only want to think of that of it as a trilogy, because the other two movies don't make any sense. So, but we'll stick with franchises of four or more. Number five, who cannot love the James Bond franchise? James Bond.
Makes sense.
Number four. Now, there are some real stinkers in this franchise, but because the ones that I really love, we watch all the time, Star Wars. That's my number four. Number three, and to me, it's still the most amazing achievement, at least through the first 26 films, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, number three. And any of those in the middle, like we could go back and watch the Iron Man movies as 1, 2, 3. We could watch the Captain America 1, 2, 3, the Avengers 1. I mean, they're just such entertaining films. But then to watch them all as one big marathon is just amazing. Number two, something my wife and I do at least once a year, often twice, Harry Potter.
I knew that was coming.
That may be. In fact, it is it's my second favorite franchise to go back to, because it's so amazing. Combination, our kids were growing up as those books were coming out and becoming popular, then the movies were really catching on. We did things like going to midnight sales to get the new book, where they would allow the book to be sold at 12:01 a.m. and we let the girls stay up super late on a school night to go buy a book. Same thing with going to a midnight movie, catching the very first. We've gone to trivia. I mean, Harry Potter, we did our whole Christmas this past season was we completely wrapped our living room in what looked like castle walls. We had this vinyl wrap, and we hung up floating candles. The whole theme was Harry Potter, and the whole Christmas season we decorated our house to look like Hogwarts. So, yeah, Harry Potter's kind of a big part of our lives. So, number two. And number one, I think you know what my number one favorite franchise is.
Could it be something that happens in Middle Earth?
It would be something that happens in Middle Earth. The Lord of the Rings. Now, on that one, while The Hobbit is somewhat satisfying, it is a far, far fall from the Lord of the Rings. But because they both take place in Middle Earth and the one story leads into the other, it qualifies per your criteria, but Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. No, my problem with The Hobbit is that they shouldn't have dragged it out into three movies. That's my problem with it.
At most, you could have done two.
Right.
But my honorable mention, though, and I don't know what you think about it, because as a trilogy, it was perfect. They didn't need to do anything other. But the Pirates of the Caribbean is one of my favorite trilogies to go back to, because you can watch it as a 1, 2, 3, and it holds all the way through.
Right. Okay. I'm not as much of a fan of those movies, but I can understand why you would say that. I like them, but I'm not a huge fan of them.
Now, if you had made it trilogies, not quad and higher, it would have been Back to the Future.
We did trilogies already. We did them.
I know.
Back with Die Hard with a Vengeance. So, yeah.
I know.
If you want, I can remind you what your responses were back then. If you're that interested in seeing the overlap, because
I'm trying to remember what I would have said trilogy wise. I'm sure it was Back to the Future. I guarantee it was Lord of the Rings. I'm pretty sure I said Pirates of the Caribbean as a trilogy. I said, maybe I've even said Raiders of the Lost Ark, as long as you only watch the first three.
Well, let me know when you want me to tell you what you said.
Oh, you've got my answers right there?
Of course I do.
Oh, okay. Yeah, what did I say? Okay. I'm curious how consistent.
Your number five was the Indiana Jones trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, your number four was the Die Hard trilogy.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Your number three was the Back to the Future trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Your number two was the original Star Wars trilogy.
Yes.
And your number one was the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Lord of the Rings. There you go. See? Yeah. Fairly consistent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Excellent. Okay, so now...
It's also a sad statement that there hasn't been another series of movies that has been able to worm its way into my top five.
Well, that just has to do with the quality of movies these days.
Unfortunately. Now the closest, but it's like basically one movie, is Dune 1 and 2, but that's not a trilogy yet. We'll see if Dune Messiah gets made.
Yeah, I know you're a big Dune fan.
Oh, so good.
Did you
just hear, by the way, I know it's for this, but since it's kind of relevant because it just got announced a week or so ago, it looks like Denis Villeneuve is going to be the next Bond director.
Ooh, interesting.
So, which I think is great because a quote from him is...
Timothy Chalamet will be the new Bond. You know what you're telling me?
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think he's going to be able to buff up for that. But what I do like, because he said, I grew up, and this reminded me of me. He said, I grew up watching the James Bond movies with my dad. And I remember doing the same thing when they'd come on TV. And he said, I've been watching James Bond my whole life. And so I have a huge reverence and I want to do the franchise justice. And I'm like, thank you. I didn't want to hear somebody say, well, I want to bring it up to speed. I want to modernize it. I want to reinvent it. No, he said, I get why this franchise exists because I've been living it my whole life. And I'm just honored to be a part of it now. So that made me feel... like maybe we're going to head in a good direction with whoever they pick as their new Bond.
Oh, wow. That's going to be really cool. Can't wait. Can't wait for that.
Yeah.
It's been too long, but that's the last one.
Yeah. Well, it's been 4 years. What, 2021, right? No Time to Die came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So now we will do our daily segment of State Your Motto. So the state that I...
State Your Motto.
That's right.
All right.
I chose for you today the state of Wyoming.
Okay.
All right. Your choices are A, virtue, liberty, and independence.
Ooh.
B, let weapons yield to the toga. Or C, she flies with her own wings. Now remember, all three of these are real state mottos. But only one of them is Wyoming.
Well, it's the equality state. I know that. It was the first. Oh, my God. Give me that first one again.
Virtue, liberty, and independence.
Ooh, I thought that was it, but I thought the Wyoming was the. See, this is where you some of the states have multiple.
Yes.
I swear I know it as just the equal rights state because I think it was the first state that allowed women's suffrage and allowed women to vote. So it was the first state to allow women to vote.
And so, you are right about that because that is another one of the mottos. The second motto is equal rights, but we're talking about something else here.
All right. So the first one you already told me. What was the second again?
Let weapons yield to the toga, and she flies with her own wings.
You know, and I'm just going to go with that third one. I don't know. I only know of it as the equal rights state, so I don't know, but I'm going to guess the third one.
No, it's let weapons yield to the toga.
Really?
Yes.
I thought that was that state. Okay. I can't even pretend to say, oh, I almost picked that one, because no, I would have picked one after that. The second one I dismissed entirely.
Right. So the phrase means, it's the idea that peace and civil authority should take precedence over military power.
Mm.
That's okay. the idea of it. It was attributed to Cicero.
Okay. Well, I honestly had never heard that, and I didn't know that.
Yes.
I for some reason, like I said, I only know of it as the equal rights state or the suffrage state, but that's
it is also known as equal rights. Yes. Both. Okay, so Alan, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Alan Sanders?
Sure, you can find me wherever you find your podcast by just searching for The Alan Sanders Show. It's a news talk, news analysis program, news of the day. So it goes stale pretty quick, but if you need to get caught up on what happened over the last day in inside the Beltway, Washington, D.C., and world nationwide, specifically U.S. politics, but sometimes it implicates the world, give it a try. I do my best to be informative, engaging, and a little bit entertaining.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rap Minute. You can find me on my website, MovieRapMinute.com. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to MovieRapMinute@MovieRap.net. So, everyone, have a great 4th of July weekend. And Alan will be back with me on Monday. But until then, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me, it ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one, no.